Oh, that's right. How you doing this afternoon? Hey, it's good to be back on the air today. We were off the air this morning, and we got lots of calls, but we are back now and just in time because we have Congressman Jeff Duncan here with you. How you doing today, Jeff?
And I'm doing great. It's great to be in Greenwood. Just ran into Taj Boyd, former quarterback from Clemson University. Was downtown, ran into him, got to talk with him about his foundation and what he's doing with underprivileged children. So it's been a good day. It's cold still outside, though.
Absolutely. Well, it's good to have you here in town. There's lots going on in town. We got growth going on. We got projects happening. So it's nice to have you here to check on things.
Absolutely. We started our visits today at the Greenwood Partnership Alliance, and Heather Jones, talking with her about some of the prospects they've got and what we could do. Ran into Taj. I actually met one of the owners of a project coming to Greenwood County. And going to speak to the Greenwood Sertoma Club this evening. So, good day in Greenwood.
Yes, it's a good day in South Carolina. Is that how that goes?
Great day in South Carolina. Thank you there, Governor.
All right. Well, you know, you, of course, are on a little break from Washington, D.C.
We're in a district. You know, we had 6 weeks straight of votes and committee set up and starting the committee hearing process, and I'm a new subcommittee chairman, the subcommittee on Western Hemisphere on Foreign Affairs Committee in this Congress. I was a subcommittee chairman on Homeland Security in the last Congress. You and I talked about that. So trying to get organized and really lay out an agenda for the year. But now we're back in the district for a week. So we've been in D.C. for 6 weeks and back in the district for a week just to find out what people are thinking and, you know, what they think so far with this new Congress and sort of put our finger on the pulse of the district. So I enjoy this type of work.
So what are you hearing from people in the district so far?
You know, people seem pretty pleased with me overall, but...
well, that's good for you, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, I like that. And... you know, they're frustrated that they hear that the Senate, you know, now in the hands of the Republicans, can't get 60 votes to pass something, and we'll have 54 votes. But they're kind of scratching their head over the logjam. They said, you had Harry Reid before, we knew what the logjam was, and now you have you don't have enough votes in the Senate to actually bring a bill up for debate. And so that's kind of interesting. But we're going to keep doing our work in the House and keep pushing forward a conservative agenda.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I saw John Boehner on Fox Sunday Fox show with Chris Wallace, and I thought it was very interesting that he kept saying the House is doing their job, and he seemed very adamant about it. I've not seen him be so adamant that the House is doing their job.
And it's really about the DHS funding bill. If you go back to the Cromnibus in December, we funded everything in government except for the Department of Homeland Security, and we put some language in there in a bill recently to fund the department to the end of the fiscal year, but prohibit the president's executive overreach on immigration and their version of amnesty through an executive memo to stop that from being able, because we disagree with the president's ability. It doesn't matter whether you like amnesty or immigration issues, and I want to have a broader conversation. It's really about what the president can or cannot do with separation of powers and unilaterally really passing law on his own. So we're at a pivotal time in American history on the separation of powers and what the president can or cannot, or the executive office can or cannot do. And so I applaud the speaker for being that firm. A position I've wanted him to get to, and would like to say I had a little bit of impact on getting him there.
Well, I think it's great, but the problem is coming up, what is it, February 27th, that's when they will run out of money, and then we will have, I think, the tactics that are being put out there that will have people working without getting paid in the Department of Homeland Security and all these type of things. What are you thinking, Jeff?
Well, there are some essential employees that will continue to operate, and, you know, they will get paid. It'll just be back pay, you know. For however long Congress waits to fund the department, just like the shutdown in 2013, you know, federal employees got paid. No one wants to shut the department down, but I don't want to give up the constitutional role that the legislative body plays in creating law And so if the president has a strong argument about immigration, he ought to come to Congress and lead and show us what he wants to do versus trying to do it unilaterally. And the founding fathers didn't set up an emperor or a king or a dictator. They set up three branches of the government, and we have the sole responsibility to legislate. And that's really what it's all about.
But what is the plan from the House as far as funding everything except the immigration?
We've done our work, man. That's what John Boehner was saying. Speaker Boehner was saying, we've done our work. We passed a funding bill. If the Senate disagrees with all the language, then they need to allow that bill to come up in the Senate and amend it and change it and send it back and keep the department from going without funding past the 27th. So Mitch McConnell needs to do his work in the Senate. And the Speaker was able to do his work on the Cromnibus, and they were able to get the votes to pass the Cromnibus that had short-term DHS funding in it. A lot of Democrats voted for that short-term DHS funding to put us in this point. So they have some culpability in it. And so I think Mitch McConnell in the Senate needs to get to work. They took a week-long recess as well, is what people call it. They're back in their districts. And I hope to goodness that Joe Manchin and all the senators that said in November that they didn't think the president had this ability to act unilaterally, I hope they're hearing from their constituents, and I hope they will cast those votes to allow this bill to at least proceed in the Senate and have a debate in front of the American people about funding and about immigration, about their executive orders, about overreach, about separation of powers. And if they want to change it, send it back, they can do that. That's the process. It works in 49 states, and it's worked in the United States federal government forever. I say 49 states, and people go, oh, why do you say 49 states? Well, Nebraska has a unicameral. They don't have two chambers. They just have a Senate. So,
well, now, but that means you go back next Monday, Tuesday?
We go back on Tuesday. I'm not sure when the Senate goes back.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the 27th is that Friday. That doesn't give a lot of time.
It's coming on quick.
I mean, this is what we as Americans sit here and watch this thing come down to the wire. And then it gets crammed down the throat, and we move on.
Washington operates on a crisis. Washington operates on these fiscal cliffs and shutdown threats and all these default threats, and that's just unfortunately how it operates. But the House acted 3 weeks ago. The Senate needs to take the bill up, and the Senate Democrats are standing in the way of a bill actually making it to the Senate floor and having a debate. They can offer amendments. They have an open rule over there. They can offer amendment after amendment to try to change it, to come to some consensus. It's the legislative process, and it should work, and they're obstructing its ability to work.
Sure. You know, one of the things that I thought was very interesting was Mick Mulvaney finding out from the IRS that once they get the immigrants get the amnesty, get their Social Security cards, that they can go back and file their taxes and get a refund.
They can get a refund. They can apply for Obamacare. They can get a lot of government benefits, and there wasn't an act of Congress. Nothing was voted on in Congress to give them those rights. Nothing was voted on that said if you gain your citizenship through DAPA or whatever, that you're going to be able to get the earned income credit or whatnot and file a tax return. We didn't vote on that. The president did that unilaterally. And we also have...
Well, then why can't you guys stop the president? If that's what you want to do, why can you not stop the president?
Well, we've tried.
We've tried. Well, that's not a very strong answer here, Jeff.
Well, the American people need to realize that there are however many Americans are out of work. There are going to be 5 million illegal aliens that will all of a sudden be given legal status and work ability to work with Social Security card and IDs and all that, and they're going to be competing with those jobs that Americans could take. And you just need to know, if you've got a diploma or you've got a technical degree or you want a job, you might be behind folks that just crossed our border and got here illegally that will possibly be able to get that job now. And that's wrong.
It is wrong. I agree. It's wrong. But I don't understand why we cannot stop something that is wrong. Why is there not the will, shall we say, in Congress to do this?
Well, the will is in the House. We passed it, passed a bill to stop this, to fund the Department of Homeland Security, and create an opportunity for future debate on immigration issues as a whole. But I go back to the fact that the Senate Democrats are holding up a bill and his ability to come to the floor, because the rule is it takes 60 votes to overcome cloture and allow a bill to move forward in the Senate. There's 54 Republicans. That means 6 or 7 Democrats need to step up to the plate and vote to allow the bill to move forward.
Okay, are the presidents going to get his way?
I don't think he will.
You don't think he will?
No, I think we'll, You look at what a federal judge just did in Texas today. They put an injunction in place, a stay, so that this can't be enforced. So now it's in the federal courts. I hope that in the fallback position of John Boehner to say, oh, it's in the courts, now we need to get a clean DHS funding bill out. I hope we continue to stand firm to force the Senate, because now you got to judge this with us that the president didn't have this ability. I think the American people are with us that you didn't have, the president didn't have this ability. I think we've got a lot of room to stand on here, and I don't think we need to capitulate too quickly on this.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope that, because you're right, the jobs issue is a big issue, and we are just allowing people to take jobs.
Yeah, they're taking the jobs that Americans could do. Now, you could bring in the whole welfare reform debate and whether these jobs that we're talking about that the illegals would take are jobs that Americans won't do anymore because they can sit at home and draw a check from the government. We've really expanded the welfare in the last 6 years. And so you could bring a welfare reform debate into this. But I think Americans want to work. I think they are looking for jobs, and I think they get disgruntled if they think about illegal aliens who just came into this country who might be given citizenship in some degree in amnesty and ability to go work, taking those jobs that they could take.
Sure. You know, what did you, speaking of that, what did you think of President Obama's, what's the one thing that really got your dander up when he gave his State of the Union address?
The fact that he didn't have another election to run. I was the first one that clapped in the chamber. Started
you were
a whole
the first
wave.
One, yeah.
I was. Started a whole round of claps there. And in fact, got him to actually go off script and smart off at us that he won too.
Right.
But I'm glad that he doesn't have another race to run. I hope we can get a Republican to replace him in the White House in 2016.
Well, I think a lot of it, don't you think a lot of it's going to depend what happens and on issues like amnesty, like the immigration, the amnesty, all these issues are going to make a difference whether Republicans are seen as people that can lead.
I think you're right. I think we've got to show some leadership in the Congress, but it's more than just Congress. We need a good, strong leader who carries a bold banner, not one of pale pastels, who shares a vision for the nation of what they think the nation looks like post-2016, how they're going to put Americans to work, that can inspire Americans about what it means to be an American, who can come up with a very clear, concise platform to fight ISIS and all the evil that's in the world right now, and the evil and a threat to real freedom. It may not be a threat to the homeland in the United States at the moment, but it is a threat to global freedom. So someone needs to step up the plate and inspire me.
Has anybody stepped up?
You know, I like components of all of them.
Components, okay.
Yeah, I mean, different aspects, rather, of all of them. I like a lot of what Ted Cruz talks about, and I like Marco Rubio and his youthfulness and his vision. He's one that's able to lay out a vision. I like the tenacity of a guy like Chris Christie. I like the tenacity of a guy like Mark Walker. And so Scott Walker. I know a Mark Walker. Scott Walker. Mark Walker works for me on my committee. That's why I had a name in my brain. But Scott Walker.
Even though he doesn't have a college education?
You know what? They've spent more time talking about Scott Walker's lack of a degree than they ever did investigating how Obama came to college and what his college transcripts may or may not look like. You know, was he a C student? Oh, we don't know.
Yeah, right.
You know, who paid for his college? Oh, we don't know. And that sort of thing. So, you know, I like elements of a lot of them. Yeah, Lindsey Graham's even talking about running now. Great on foreign policy.
What about Jeb Bush?
Jeb Bush, you know, he's got the fundraising ability. He's probably a little more establishment than I want to see. But, you know, I think they've all, and Jeb included, all have to lay out that vision of, you know, how are you going to inspire Americans about American greatness and American exceptionalism? Do you really believe that? And how are you going to inspire Americans to turn this country around and make it great again? And Americans can do that. And we put a man on the moon. We beat the axis of evil, the Nazis and the Japanese and the Italians on two different fronts, on opposite sides of the globe. I mean, Americans do whatever we put our mind to. And we can defeat evil in the Middle East or wherever it may cross. Up, we can get Americans back to work, and so I'm looking for a leader that's going to show me what that vision is.
Oh, I thought you were going to say show me the money. Sorry. Now, that has to do with the money, though, because if we were all making money, we'd all feel better about things.
Well, I want them to understand that America needs to live under a balanced budget. I want them to talk about that. I mean, really, think about how many politicians have sat right here and talked about the need for the nation to have a balanced budget. But Democrats and Republicans talk about a balanced budget. Why don't we have a balanced budget? Democrats and Republicans talk about a simpler tax code, how it's a more fair, and I talk about a flatter, simpler, fair tax code, but why do we have a complicated tax code? If politicians talk about making a tax code more simpler for the American people, why do we have a complicated tax code? And so it takes the resolve. I want to hear from our president about that resolve, and I want to hear that vision, and I want him to inspire me. And the guy that, or girl that can, a woman that could inspire me is probably going to be the one I'll get behind.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think it's it seems like it's a long time away, and it seems like it's awful early, but it really isn't, is it? I mean, you know, when you talk about all the people that are going to drop in and drop out of this election process.
It is. It's going to come on quick. You think about South Carolina is the first in the South primary. That'll be, you know, January, early February of 2015. So it's coming on quick. 2016. I mean, yeah. It's coming on quick.
Yeah.
And so we're in 2015, aren't we?
Right.
Time flies.
Yeah,
yeah. 2016. Next year this time, we'll know who South Carolina voted for.
Right.
Think about that. Think about how quickly it's coming on.
Yeah.
I was out at Iowa at the Freedom Summit that Congressman King and Citizens United put on, and I got a chance to really talk with Ben Carson and talk with Chris Christie some more, talk with Sarah Palin, talk with Scott Walker, talk with Ted Cruz, yeah, talk with Carly Fiorina. Talked with a lot of them, and it was it was inspiring to hear their, you know, it's one-on-one.
Right.
To hear them talk about things. And some of them hadn't made that 100% commitment to jump in yet.
Sure.
But we'll see. We'll see what the field looks like.
Sure. It is going to be something that I think should be really pivotal in our country, because we are right on the precipice of just, if we survive with what's happening over there in the Middle East. I mean, 21 Christians just last Thursday, Friday. This is unbelievable to me. And it's unbelievable that it is not making any real impact on the president, on what we're doing.
Well, he's on the golf course.
Yeah, I know, but it bothers me that we don't have a leader that is standing up there saying, this will not fly. This is not going to be. I mean, nothing could have made me feel more proud when I saw the Jordanian president go right back there to Jordan and then get in a plane and fly with the missions.
Basically avenge the death of the Jordanian pilot. And then you saw the same thing with Egypt after these Coptic Christians. And if you understand the Coptic Christians in Egypt, they're not the most well-liked Egyptian population. But the Egyptians sent warplanes into Libya and took it after ISIS. And so
they're like little we're the giant out there, right? And we sit back, and they, the little ones, go out there, and where are we at?
We're requiring our other countries, other different sects and groups to actually do our fighting for us. And there's one group that we seem to turn our back on. That's the Kurdish people, who are actually doing the heavy lifting in Iraq against ISIL. And the U.S., typically is friendly with the Kurds. We didn't lose a single American life in the Kurdistan region of Iraq during any of the Gulf War or the Iraq War. I've visited with them numerous times both in Washington and in Erbil. And they are pro-American. They're capitalist. Or they believe in a lot of the similar things we believe in, and they're taking it to ISIS there. And so we're not even supporting them with armament and other things that they've requested, just to help them fight this threat to global freedom more easily. So, you know, when is America going to step up? Now, we're looking at an AUMF, an authorization of the use of military force, the White House presented about going after ISIS, but is weak. It actually
I mean, it's not any better than the one he already has. Right?
He has more authority under the existing AUMF for the Iraq and Afghanistan war on terror than he would under this. And this AUMF would do away with those.
Why was he doing this?
You tell me. I don't know if he's a pacifist. I don't know if he wants limited power so he can say, look, my hands are tied because of the AUMF Congress passed. Well, we won't pass the AUMF. We'll probably craft something different. And I'll be a part in that. I'll play a part in that in the Foreign Affairs Committee. And I can't tell you what that looks like now, but the discussions are going on. It's going to go through the process, because we're basically going to be committing men and women, American women, in harm's way, or possibly not. I don't know what it's going to look like,
Ann.
And I'm going to play a part in that. It's a role I take very seriously. And honestly, I don't like AUMFs. I don't like the War Powers Act. I think Congress has, in the Constitution, Congress has the sole authority to declare war. And so we're operating under something that I don't necessarily agree with the process and where we are in the 21st century. So.
All right. Well, let's join South Carolina News. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, if you want to give us a call, 229-7984, that's 229-7984. I do have Congressman Jeff Duncan in studio, that's right, with us this afternoon. So it's nice to have him here. Gracie's just coming over to say hello. And Gracie, why don't you go lay down? Why don't you go lay down? Thank you very much. Please go lay down. All right. But, Jeff, you know, we've been talking about a lot of things, but I just would like to finish up on the ISIL subject right
now. Islamic here. State, just yes, IS is yes. Fine.
It just looks like with what just happened in Copenhagen, we had France a few weeks before that. They're going all out. I mean, what's to say that, you know, when they're talking about that there's isolated cells right here in the United States, we could be under attack a lot sooner, I think, than anybody has ever thought about.
Yeah, I don't know how ISIS is really just a relatively new phenomenon, a group, but they've gained in strength because of what they're saying and what they're doing. There's a great article in The Atlantic, which is a periodical, a magazine. I've linked it on my Facebook page. It's about 27 pages electronically. It wasn't that much. It's about 7 or 8 pages in the magazine. But it's about ISIS and about the Islamic State. It's worth reading. If you really want to understand how this group got so much momentum so quickly and what they're trying to do with recreating a caliphate and establishing a caliphate, which is a state that's governed by Sharia, how they're different than Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is really a disjointed group of terror cells all over the globe. They're globally really against the West.
Didn't I just hear, though, that they're thinking about joining up with them? I think I heard something like that in the news.
You know, a lot of the Al-Qaeda elements have joined ISIS. And even in Libya, ISIS in Libya is probably Al-Qaeda that attacked Benghazi. Very similar. But Al-Qaeda as a whole and the Al-Qaeda governing structure is really just a loose affiliation of terror cells. And they don't seize any property. They don't own any territory or control any territory. They don't have a governing structure like this caliphate does, and they have established an Islamic State caliphate. And so they have Sharia law governance. They have tribunals. They have the law is there, and it's being imposed, and it's different than Al-Qaeda. But Al-Qaeda is mainly targeting Western influences. You know, the Islamic State is targeting anyone that doesn't prescribe or subscribe to their blend of Islam, even Muslims themselves, if you don't fall under their brand. So
yeah, it sounds kind of like Hitler and blue-eyed blondes. I mean, you know, kind of sounds kind of similar.
A lot of similarities there in that, you know, when we were targeting Nazi Germany, we were going after the Nazis. We weren't going after all Germans. Mm-hmm. This isn't targeting all Muslims. This is targeting ISIS, the Islamic State, and the evil side of that. And so the similarities stop there between, you know, the Nazis were a small fraction of Germans.
Sure.
ISIS, the Islamic State's a small fraction of Muslims. And that's where the similarities lie.
I know. But, I mean, it just does seem that there is that going after. And if you don't subscribe to their beliefs, then you don't belong. You don't belong alive.
Whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Jew, whether you're Buddhist, whether you're agnostic, atheist, they want you to subscribe to their blend or brand of Islam.
You know, and I think the other thing that not anybody's really talking a lot about, but still, they do not have any fear for loss of life. They look at
life a lot differently. They put a value on life that's different than Western value. They also understand they're fighting jihad, which means if they die as a jihadist on the battlefield, they would immediately be given some rewards in heaven. And so it's all part of that ideological belief. And,
so therefore, we
just
can't
different.
We can't fight it the same way of reasonable people having a belief in life and you know preserving life.
Yeah, I mean, they have a different opinion of life, and there's no doubt about that. They don't put the value that we put on it.
So that is why I don't really understand why, you know, or here's the flip side. Are we being goaded into doing something here with every time that they kill 21 or they burn the Jordanian pilot or the gal that turned up dead in this? Sometimes I feel like we're being goaded into doing something.
I don't think the people in Copenhagen think we're being goaded. I don't think the people in Paris. I don't think the people in Egypt. I don't think the people in Jordan. I don't think the people in Western Iraq all think we're being goaded. They understand the evilness of this group and what they're trying to do. And, you know, if you read this article in The Atlantic, it does say that one of the things that will hasten the return of the 12th Iman and all is a major battle that would happen against a group. And it's Rome in the Quran, I believe, but in what the ISIS believes. But Rome could mean a lot of different things. You heard Rome used by the ISIS terrorists when in the beheading of the Coptic Christians that were coming to Rome. What does that mean? I think, you know, we've got to listen closely to their words and try to understand exactly what they're saying. But I don't think we're being goaded, and even if we are, this is a threat to global freedom. And I think a lot of folks need to wake up. They're already waking up in Paris. They're waking up in Copenhagen. They're waking up in Jordan. They're waking up in Egypt. And maybe there'll be a coalition of countries that love freedom, whether they're Muslims or whether they're Christians or whether they're Jews, that will come together and fight this this evil entity known as the Islamic State.
Well, I think something needs to be done sooner than later.
Yeah, the visuals of beheadings, the visuals of burning of children or burning of men is something that I don't think the world will tolerate much more of.
Well, how about having children behead people? How about have a child standing up there saying, this is what I want to be like? I mean, you know, it just goes against
your possibly having children burn themselves. Yes. Or children beheaded or, you know, whatnot. Whether it's children or whether it's adults, it's wrong, it's evil. And yeah, hopefully the free world will do something about it.
Sure. So I just wish the president would come on stronger with something. And I certainly hope when you go back up there and you craft something that you give it some bite to be able to do what's necessary to finish this off. We cannot go on like this. We're going to be in a war forever.
Well, this president can't even talk about the elements of evil in terms that can define the enemy. And when you don't talk about the enemy, define the enemy, how do you defeat the enemy? And you've got to be able to use words like jihad, and you got to use words like terrorism and acts of terror, radical Islamic terrorists that are involved. He's not willing to use those terms. In fact, they've struck a lot of those terms out of the lexicons at the NCTC or FBI or even the Pentagon. And so I think you've got to be able to define in clear terms who the enemy is.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about religious freedom on the college campuses. And we're going to be talking about, we may talk about that health care act called Obamacare. Hey, don't you go away. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe Cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery in studio with me this afternoon is Gracie. and, sorry, I had to give Gracie Trump billing, Congressman Jeff Duncan. How you doing today, Jeff? Having a good time talking to you today.
Having a great time, and I got to meet Gracie today and, learn a little bit about her and the animal shelter and spaying and neutering, and that's good stuff.
Yeah, she's quite a gal.
Yeah, she is.
She makes me spend money every day of my life, yes. But some of the things that we wanted to touch on, the Congress did, for the umpteenth time, defeat Obamacare, although I don't think that's really going to go anywhere, is it?
I think 40 times about something like that we voted for some facet of Obamacare. As long as President Obama occupies the White House, I don't see it going anywhere, but it does signal that we haven't forgotten about the issue, that it's still out there. You're seeing the Democrats now really urge the president to take some sort of action to maybe change the law one more time to allow folks not to have to pay a penalty on their taxes. And that was one of the penalties that was imposed in the law originally, and that was try to force folks to sign up under Obamacare, and now they want to do away with that, postpone that implementation, and it's just, it's bad law if you've got to keep doing that. And so I happily voted to repeal Obamacare, and I'll vote again until it's gone.
Now, just real quick, Gruber, all the things that he's been out there saying about how this law came to be and everything, what did you think when that all became unveiled?
It was telling really the things we suspected all along of some of their mindset. More lies out of the White House because they said they didn't have any consultation with it, and then it was proven that he had visited with the president and been to the White House during the implementation or the crafting of this legislation. And so I would love to see Gruber in front of a congressional committee for hours upon hours just grilling about his role and about what the White House was thinking and as this thing was crafted back in 2008, 2009, 2010.
You know, one of the things that I wonder, do you think that the people that are surrounding him, his cabinet, his people that work with him every day, do you think that he is in touch with what is happening in our United States?
You're talking about President Obama?
President Obama. I mean, he has all his staff, and they seem kind of going in a direction. Do you think it is the staff or is the president really in charge here?
I definitely think it's the president has set the agenda out there and given the staff a lot of free rein to get it done and have an overarching progressive vision for America and policy, and then let the staff go. And I think they came in with using health care. It goes back to Hillary Clinton tried to get Hillary care, but that's something Democrats and the progressive leaning Democrats have been pushing for a very, very long time. Ultimately, a single-payer state-run system that everyone has to subscribe to. And so once that becomes a reality, then that's very socialistic at that point. So I think the president is in touch when he's not on the golf course, which is about every other day, it seems like. But I think he has laid out a vision and given a lot of leeway.
Okay. All right. Now, what about, will there be a plan to replace Obamacare?
Yeah, there's two plans right now. They may be joined before a bill is actually brought forward. In the last Congress, Dr. Tom Price, who's now chairman of the Budget Committee, and Dr. Phil Rowe from Tennessee, congressman, both had a plan. And these are people that came from the medical field that understand it a lot more than you and I probably, have crafted a plan to return some of this back to the individual and back to the free market, allowing portability and ownership of the plan and allowing it to cross state lines and other things, which I think are very, very important.
Well, I think there should be something that helps people that have no other means to go.
I think so. I mean, but they were doing it anyway, even before this. They had the ability to go to the emergency room, and really nothing's changed in that.
Well, the only thing that's changed in the emergency room, now when you go, if you're not signed up for Obamacare, they're going to sign you up, and you're going to have to pay that deductible before they'll even see you, I think. That's, yeah. I've heard of some cases like that.
I've got Obamacare, and knock on wood, we haven't had to use it since we signed up. But, I just think, they talk about the rising cost of health care was a sort of the driver for the need for Obamacare, but really the government's involvement in health care help drive the price up. I mean, all the mandates coming down from D.C., you know, whether it's EMTALA or whether it's more regulations of Medicare and Medicaid, you know, that was funding streams that came down. Well, the money doesn't come down from government without a whole lot of strings attached and mandates. If you're going to get this, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And so I think that was an attributable factor to the rising cost of health care that they used to justify government takeover.
Sure. Now, what about this the 5-year plan that is being developed that has to do with drilling off the coast? Some people are really upset that we might be drilling off the coast and that we should be putting big wind turbines. What do you have to say about all this?
Well, oil or natural gas, it's not just oil. We don't really know. We haven't done any 21st century seismic testing out there to really know what recoverable resources are out there. So that's the first thing, to allow seismic. And the seismic companies are excited because the draft proposal for the next 5-year plan does include some areas off the coast of South Carolina in the South Atlantic. So I'm all for it. Let's see what might be out there. I like to say that prosperity is just over the horizon. Well, guess what? That where these areas are over the horizon. You won't see oil platforms and drilling derricks from the beaches at Myrtle or Polly's or Debbie Doo or Fripp or anywhere because they're over the visible horizon. The DPP, the draft proposal, has a 50-mile exclusion zone. I think that's a little much. But even with if we were able to lessen that 50 miles, it would still be over the visible horizon. We're talking from, you know, out to about 120 miles. So people say, well, you're going to have we don't want a deepwater horizon accident to happen off the coast of South Carolina. Nor do I. But there's one fallacy to their argument, is that deepwater horizon, it was deep water, it's 5,600 feet, it's a mile deep below the ocean surface. Out there at 120 miles off the coast, you're talking about 100, 120 feet deep water. It's not deep. And if in that relatively shallow water, a man can deal with any accident that might happen, anything hands-on. They can jump in the water and deal with it with their own hands, not with robotics a mile away on the surface trying to operate a robot in darkness and cold temperatures and high pressure trying to cap a gusher. So there's just, you can't compare apples and apples because they're not. They're apples and oranges when it comes to comparing Macondo, the Deepwater Horizon spill, to anything that may occur off the coast of South Carolina. And we're also talking about a long ways out there.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not looking at anything imminent, are we, that is going to be able to be done?
Well, the next 5-year plan would be 2017 through 2022. And so it's a ways off. What I want to do is just keep it alive and well and make sure we try to get our area in the 5-year plan. That's just a draft proposal now. But I think it's important. I don't want to say, oh, we're not going to do that and throw our hands up. Might be recoverable resources there. But, you know, I think all the jobs that energy production, create, the onshore jobs support the offshore industry is a tremendous economic boost to the state.
Wow. Well, I would like to see it. You know, the thing is, I think, are we now talking about a national gas tax? Since the price of gas is low, we should start a national gas tax.
There are some people talking about that, but it's not me. And it's not any of the people I hang with. I think it, maybe a senator or two and maybe a progressive in the House, but that's not going to happen.
No. Okay, you heard it right here on WCRS. That's not going to happen.
Not going to happen at the federal level. And, y'all better think about what South Carolina is going to do.
Yeah.
And focus your efforts on, with regard to gas tax and other things, focus your efforts on the state, because I don't see a national gas tax happening at all.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to just touch on with you, Jeff, I know that you weren't in the House down here in Columbia when the flag issue came up. But right here in Greenwood, we do have the monument. And there in Uptown Greenwood, there is a move to change out the plaques there that say colored and white, which goes back to 1929 when the monument was erected, which is the way that the house, the way that our country was, because of the military, was non-integrated. That's the way it was. And I remember the issue with the flag, and now we're moving on. It's called the Heritage Acts. There were some changes that were made. Where do you think that we stand, not only here in Greenwood, but across our state, actually across our nation, as far as preserving history, whether it's good or bad? I mean, what is your feeling about it?
Well, history is history. You can't be a revisionist, I don't think. You can't look back at history with 21st century goggles either and judge what people did or didn't do, you know, 100 years ago. And this is a local issue I'm not going to get involved in. I appreciate you following it. I appreciate you educating me. I was in the bubble in D.C. and had no idea what was going on here. But I think that's something that Greenwood and the state of South Carolina can work on and deal with. But I go back to the fact that I'm not a revisionist. I believe in true history. I like to study revolutionary history. I like to study some of the 20th century history. I'm not a big Civil War buff, and some people are. I've just chosen the Revolutionary War and then World War II and it's sort of my era on forward. So anyway, thanks for following that issue, but I'm sure that they'll come to some sort of resolution. I would encourage folks not to try to judge things with 21st century goggles.
Sure. And, of course, as this winds through, there is an amendment down there to amend the law down there for Greenwood. I would presume that people should be calling their representatives or senators and letting them know how they feel about it.
Always, always get involved. If you don't want to see bad things happen or if you want to help good things happen, then you need to stay in touch with your elected officials, me included.
That's right. And, you know, that's something that I don't you think kind of in a lot of ways that we sit back here and we're here in South Carolina and we look at the whole national scene, right? And we go, gosh, why are they doing that?
Right.
And we don't let anybody know how we feel sometimes.
Well, email me at, Jeff. There's a lot of different ways. You can Google me, Jeff Duncan, or I think my email address is jeff.duncan.house.gov.
Facebook.
You can go to our website. You can go to Facebook and friend me. I've got two Facebook pages, Jeff Duncan and then Congressman Jeff Duncan. Email me at the office. Just a lot of ways, and let me know how you feel about things. Let me know how you feel about this interview. Let me know how you feel about federal issues such as Obamacare, offshore drilling, or ISIS, or the UMF, or you know any of that. And that's how you get my attention. You contact us, and if you got an issue with veterans, Social Security, immigration, visa issues, whatever, contact us. What we're there for. We have offices in Lawrence, Anderson. We've got roving folks all over the district. Tyler James is with me today, covers this area. Jan Harmon, Lance Williams for this area too. So we've got a great team. I can't brag on them enough, and we'd love to help you if you got an issue. And like I said, stay in touch with me. Stay in touch with Mike Pitts, with Ann Parks, with Floyd Nicholson, with Billy O. Odell, all of them, Shannon Riley, you know, make sure that you stay in touch with them and go to their functions, get to know them, because I can tell you if somebody contacts me and I know them, I probably pay a little more attention to that. I'm not saying that we do, but it's relationship building.
Absolutely. You know, you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Well, Jeff, this has been a real treat for you to come and sit down with us and talk about all the different issues here. Is there any last issue that you want to discuss before I let you go?
The last thing is go to my Facebook page if you're interested in the Islamic State. We put that article from The Atlantic. You can probably look that up. If you want to learn about this whole philosophy and what's going on and kind of be informed about this evil that's going on in the world, that's one of the best articles I've read. I put it out there to try to inform people, and I just encourage folks to educate yourself on this because this isn't going away overnight.
It's not going to go away, and I think that's the thing that is just so horrible about it is that we don't seem to be making decisions to do something about it now.
Well, we are. We're taking up AUMF, Authorization of the Use of Military Force, and
okay, so the president isn't doing anything about this.
Not right now, he's not. And he's got the power under the existing AUMFs to do something about it. But he's so fearful of putting boots on the ground. But I think, personally, I think it's going to take boots on the ground. I think it's going to take a very decisive, deadly action to get their attention and to end this threat. This is evil. It's pure evil. And you've seen the acts. We talked about them. And so, but I think if we do allow boots on the ground, and what I'm looking for in AUMF is flexibility for the commanders to prosecute the war based on their judgment, not trying to micromanage a war from D.C., and give them the rules of engagement to actually defeat the enemy.
Yeah, this is what needs to happen. I couldn't agree more. Congressman Jeff Duncan, always a pleasure to have you in studio. Always a pleasure to have you on the phone. Thanks so much today.
Ann, thank you for having me. I love Ann, and we'll talk soon.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Gracie, thanks for putting your 2 cents worth in today.
Way to go, Gracie.
Bye-bye, everybody.